And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 721. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. We head to, not Oakland anymore. Sacramento to talk. Actually, can't even say it. It's the Athletics, everybody. They don't even have a city anymore. It's the Athletics. They're going to wear a patch that shows they're in the Sacramento. It's the biggest joke on the face of the planet. But we're going to talk Athletics here to get you ready for the season because they actually do have fantasy relevance when we get to it. In order to help me break this down, this gentleman was kind enough to help me last year. He's back again this year to make it happen. You can find his work at pitcherlist.com, Baseball HQ, the In the Pen podcast, the First Pitch podcast, and much, much more probably as 2025 comes your way. He's on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Jake, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great. Glad to be here. Pumped to talk some baseball despite the circumstances of discussing a team in the situation in which the A's find themselves in.
Yeah, I was shocked. Like, I figured they'd at least go by Sacramento A's for a couple of years, and I hear they're not doing that. They were going to do a commemorative patch and stuff, and I was like, what are we doing? What, like, when you think it can't get worse, it gets worse. It's just mind-boggling what's going on there, but we digress. What can we do about that? First off, looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks, looks like. Maybe it's about a month from now, I guess, give or take, for the barf draft. You in or no?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, I thought so, yeah.
You know where I live? You come to my house or something?
No, I'm not knocking on doors. Don't worry about that. We're good there. But, I'll be seeing you in person in San Francisco, so that'll be fun. But before we start talking hitters and pitchers and all the Athletics, that stuff that can be offered, just for fun, what were your thoughts on their season last year? Like, I know they kind of overachieved, I guess, from a certain perspective. What were your thoughts on how things played out for the Oakland Athletics at that time?
Yeah, I thought it went a lot better than I expected. A lot of the dudes who I was pretty down on in our podcast last year definitely overperformed from what I expected. So that was really cool to see. They felt like a team that might be relying on pitching. So it was really cool to see some hitters break out because it's been a while. So it's sort of cool to see the next guy who's going to be traded before he becomes a free agent, guys like Lawrence Butler and stuff. But yeah, I was surprised to see how well they did and that they, you know, were almost trumped by the White Sox at being the worst team in baseball. So it sort of took away from what could have really, really been a nightmare season. Imagine if they had a season as bad as the White Sox in their circumstances of moving out of that ballpark and everything surrounding that. So that could have been awful. So I'm glad they at least had, you know, a little bit of fight for that season.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It could have been way worse, all things considered. Yeah. And that second half was strong. They fought the law won, stuff along those lines. And we'll hit on all of those players as we get going here. So let's get into it. For those keeping track at home, I'm going to reference ADP from January 1st on in the NFBC Draft Champions. It's just a reference point. Doesn't mean everything, but we're interested in Jake's discussions about the players here. So we're going to start with a man that has a phenomenal Twitter presence. He learned how to cook without TikTok for 12 hours. That was a tweet that came out, which is really fun to check out. He's visited Sacramento. He just got paid as well. And that's when Brent Rooker, who coming off a monster year right now, this past season, 39 home runs, 11 steals, .293 average. I think the average was the biggest shocker there, and currently has an ADP of around 72 since January 1st. So what are your thoughts on Brent Rooker? Because you have to pay a premium if you want him right now.
Yeah, last year I was out on him and I definitely paid the price. I was worried about the strikeouts holding back his batting average, and I wasn't sure if the power was going to be enough to make up for it, but turns out he reduced the strikeout rate and it increased his power output. So everything sort of went right for him. Obviously, we can't expect for him to repeat a career season like this. And when I say career season, literally every metric is a career high. I was going through making notes and I was just like, okay, maybe I'll like highlight or italicize guys' statistics when they're a career high. And I started with Brent Rooker as everything was a career high. I was like, okay, I can't do this. It's going to take forever. Yeah. So he really had an incredible season. And like I said, a lot of that was due to better contact metrics, which was exactly what we were looking for. So like I said, can't expect a repeat of last season, but similar power numbers, 30 to 35 homers and a batting average from, I don't know, anywhere from 250 to 270 sounds about right for me. And because now he's inked up to a 5-year, $60 million extension, he's going to be locked into the middle of that lineup every day. And it's an improving lineup. So we could see another season in which he surpasses 100 RBI. And just the fact that he threw in 10 steals last year is just a cherry on top.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've had this discussion with other people. There's going to be natural regression. There's no doubt about that. It's just the power is legit. I have zero concerns about the power. When it comes to any Oakland Athletic, it's always like, okay, the surrounding cast is going to control the run production. Well, like you mentioned, and we saw in the second half, it's a very much improving ball club. Like, do they run as hot? Who knows? But even if they take a step back, still very good for Brent Rooker's stats. It's the batting average. That's the big thing. Like, I don't think he's a 290 hitter. But like you said, 260, 270, like you can live in that world. Things are good. He's a util only right now. Great chance he gets outfield because they talked about an injury that's all better now that he should be able to get out there and play. So I think it's interesting. If you can build the proper team, if you're not worried about putting a utility first guy early, I think he's a fine pick. I think there's a lot to like with Brooker, especially if he can steal you 10-plus bags again. That would be the cherry on top.
Yeah.
All right, a guy that I love. I caught a lot of flack on the show with my co-host Ryan Bloomfield when I said, hey, start picking up Lawrence Butler. He's got the pedigree. He's going to get starts. He looked good in AAA. Let's see. And then people looked at his previous production in the bigs and it's like, nah, you're crazy. You're crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, I get that you're crazy, but you take chances on players, I guess, when they're young and they're doing improvements. And did I think Lawrence Butler would be this monster? No. But when you finish 262, 22 homers and 18 steals in 125 games, that's pretty, pretty good. That also carries an ADP of 67 now. So we have two A's inside the top 75, things people haven't said in a long time when it comes to them.
There's another one.
Oh, yeah, there is another one. You're right. Yes, when we get to the good old Mason back there, I believe, is the other one. Or I might be wrong. But
no, that's correct.
Yeah. So Butler, what are we thinking? Because this dude put up a big season and weirdly enough, might not have seen it all just yet.
Yeah, he was. I remember last year, he was one of the sort of ancillary guys that I mentioned could have a chance to do something because he put up some ridiculous numbers in the minor leagues. And I think the biggest difference between him in the minor leagues versus him in the majors last year and early or 2023 and early 2024 was the swing and miss was just off the charts. He was striking out well over 30% of the time, totally unsustainable and not at all what he was doing in the minors, where he was a sub 20% strikeout rate guy who was able to make contact, allowing him to get to his power and get on base so he could steal. So that's what we were looking for. And we didn't see that at the beginning of the season. And you were right on the mark to suggest everybody pick him up because over the last 3 months, he batted over 300, hit 20 of his 22 homers and stole 14 of his 18 bags. And that was in 300 plate appearances, and he had like 450 for the season. So we're seeing all the power come in those 3 months. He reduces strikeout rate there too, and the Statcast metrics back everything up as well. So for me, it's tough to go that early on a guy who's really only shown 3 months of production. Nonetheless, that production is pretty enticing, especially if you put that over a full season where he's looking like a potential 30-30 candidate if everything comes together. So I'm pretty intrigued by him. I think I would probably take the chance on him if he slides a little bit, but you see how close the min and max are in terms of ADP, where the min is 57 and the max is 74. So you don't really have a lot of chance to make a choice. It's either you take him when it's time to take him or you're not getting him. So for me, I'm probably avoiding him just because of the lack of flexibility in drafting there. But maybe once we get closer to draft day, we see his ADP sort of disperse a little bit and you get to take more chances later in drafts and actually feel good about, you know, getting value above where you drafted him.
Yeah, and you nailed my thoughts on this one as well, because I love Lawrence Butler as a player. I think he's a fine fantasy asset. I haven't clicked the draft button yet, and I'm one of the degenerates that have drafted a lot already. Mm-hmm. So I've had my chances, and it just hasn't happened yet at that area of the draft. And I want to draft Lawrence Butler. I just haven't drafted Lawrence. So it's like you said, it's not fitting the mold just yet, and that could be a detriment. We'll see how that plays out. All right, JJ Bleday. Couple fun things here. He's projected to hit third for the team, which is very, very surprising. 20 home runs last year, improved a .243 average. His ADP is .276 right now. How are we feeling on JJ Bleday?
He's, you know, pretty mid to me. He feels just like just a guy. And maybe that's more of a real life thing, but I think that's probably my fantasy brain talking, because when you think about like a 20% above league average hitter with defense in center field who batted lead off most of last season, that's pretty decent. Let's see, his WAR was probably pretty good, 3.1. yes, that's above average. So Yeah, I think he's a better real life player than he is a fantasy player for me, where he's got decent enough power to be somebody that you roster all year long in 15 team leagues. But any shallower, he doesn't make a big enough difference, because a guy like him, you sort of want him to do more than just hit for power, because he doesn't provide much in the batting average department. He's pretty average. So you're hoping for, I don't know, a huge output in the run or RBI departments or some stolen bases, but he's almost a zero in that department, making his sole contributing stat being home runs and either one of runs in RBI. It sort of doesn't set him apart. That being said, he's going pretty late. So it's like, if you can get him around pick 300 or after pick 300, especially for a 15 teamer, that's very solid production that you're not going to really think about all year long. It's just not going to be the type of player that does something so outstanding that he makes a difference in a 12 team league.
Yeah, you know, a big part of that for me, I like him more so in a 15 teamer where you need more of the floor play than the ceiling play. I don't think JJ's got a ceiling, but hitting third for an improving team, like, there's a pretty good floor. And you mentioned his defense, he's going to be there every day. So he's not going to like break the mold anytime soon, but he'll like just consistently put it together for you, which if it's post 300, I could see having a lot of legs to it. All right, Shea Langeliers to others. He had his coming out party this past year with the 29 homers, but more importantly, upped his average to 224. So that's the thing I've been looking for. If you can sit for a little average, things will be good in fantasy. Right now, Shea has an ADP of around 127. So he's like the sixth, seventh, eighth catcher off the board, depending on your draft. How are you feeling on Shea? Because I wanted nothing to do with him last year, and I'm kind of intrigued this year.
Yeah, I was in the same boat last year. It was another case of a guy who struck out too much, and I guess I didn't weigh heavily enough the improvements a player that's only 25 year olds is going to make when he becomes 26 and has more experience in the majors, especially as a catcher. They're always late bloomers at the plate because they have to focus so much on the defensive aspect of their game. So it was really cool to see not only the improvements in the batting average department, but a jump in the power department as well. Nearing 30 home runs is pretty special for a catcher, in my opinion. And he backs everything up with his StatCast metrics as well. That even suggests he underperformed. And that has made the projection systems suggest a step forward as well. So if you can start seeing the projection systems, which are making 50th percentile projections, and they're suggesting it's going to be better than last year, I feel like that's somebody you got to buy into, because your floor is something that we know is valuable. And the ceiling is well beyond that, where he takes another big step and becomes a zero or even a positive in the batting average department while contributing 30 home runs. That's really incredible production from a catcher. So for me, I think I'm all in, especially in roto leagues, because in points leagues, the play discipline metrics aren't great. Roto leagues though, he's incredible. And especially the two catcher leagues, he's going to be very, very valuable.
100%. Like, if you're aggressive on catcher and you somehow get him at catcher two, my goodness, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
Still fine as a catcher one. But what I've been kind of describing him as this preseason is Cal Raleigh light. And we saw Cal Raleigh slowly show improvements in the average throughout his career, and the power kept staying there. Like, if Langeliers can just kind of follow that pattern, we're gravy. So I'm hoping, like, the power's already there. Just get that average to slowly keep improving, all aboard that train. Tyler Soderstrom, who was once going to be the future catcher for the A's, now switched to first base here, and that's fine because they need a first baseman with Ryan Noda out of town. Soderstrom, we know, immense power in the minor leagues, hasn't completely showcased it in the bigs. Injuries and other things have derailed that. Batting average is kind of a concern as well, but a 296 ADP right now, Jake, and it looks like he is the guy going into this year, where in years past there was questions of platooning and all this other stuff. So what's your thoughts on Soderstrom near 300 ADP? We know has some crazy pop.
Yeah, I'm sort of hesitant, and I feel like that's probably mostly tied to him losing catcher eligibility, where he was such a sneaky play last season if he got the opportunity because of the catcher eligibility he had. Now without that, he's really relying on his bat, especially in fantasy. That being said, he was pretty underrated last year. It's hard to look at somebody's counting stats when they have such a small sample size like he did, and not really a small sample size, sort of that mid-range where you're not really sure whether you should be like doubling his numbers or whatever. He only had 200 plate appearances, so it's difficult to determine, was that season good? So you have to look at the adjusted metrics like WRC plus, where he's at 114. So he was pretty solid last year. The Statcast metrics though are off the charts, like 14.5% barrel rate, 49% hard hit rate, which suggests a lot of power next year, which is good. And he didn't strike out an obscene amount, 25%. So I think he can be a guy that bats at least a little bit over 200 and produces 25 homers. And I think that's pretty solid that late in drafts after pick 300, especially in deeper leagues. I wouldn't see many people going for him in 12 team leagues, unless you're in a Yahoo league where he probably still has catcher eligibility. But in those 15 team leagues, I think Soderstrom's going to be a pretty decent flyer sort of late in drafts where you're going just for the upside.
Yeah. And this is a theme with most of this roster. They're all so young and most limited experience, like a couple of years at most. Like, so there's something you have a full season technically in the bigs yet. So there's a lot of like different growth potentials in so many of these guys that make them those kind of intriguing late picks to take some gambles on. Like a Zach Geloff a couple of years ago, he puts up this great year. You know, people were pointing at the concerns that told me, like, they kept telling me to don't get so excited, Bubba. He's good, but not this good. And he fell back a bit. But when I look at a Geloff profile, like last year, 17 homers, 25 steals, hit 211 because he struck out like crazy. But I see a 15-15 guy that has 20-20 upside if he can just hone in the skills a little bit more on the discipline metrics. ADP of 210. Jake, are you interested in a guy like this? Again, he'll be 25 years old this year.
Yeah, for me, I always find myself averse to batting average guys like this that don't produce in that department. Though he is really a great power speed guy, and he has good defense enough to be a mainstay at second base for the A's, but all the underlying metrics suggest that even last year was an overperformance in the batting average department. He had a 199 XBA, and that was for a guy who batted 211. So he just strikes out way too much, never makes enough contact. I'm surprised he stole 25 bases with a 270 OBP. For me, I don't think the bat's going to be enough to make up for the sort of discrepancy between the production that he produces, that he has in power and speed versus the batting average and the rest of the whole picture, where he's just not producing enough runs and RBIs. He's not getting enough hits. And then, do the home runs and stolen bases make up for it? For me, around pick 200 is too rich for me.
Yeah. And I get that. It's just because it's do you want to take the gamble? Because I'm with you. Is one thing I've tried to focus more on this year, and it's not always working, is be more cognizant of batting average, because you can just throw that away so quickly. Like, you can take a gamble here and there, but you can't do it all the time, because then you're in trouble. And a guy like Geloff, if you're taking Langoliers, you can't take Geloff too. At least Langoliers is a catcher. You can work with that. Second base, you can find batting average. And so, it's tough, because like, I see this certain talent level, but there's a couple hindrances that got to take that next step, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Seth Brown, first base outfield eligible. Actually, one of the veterans on this team. Going to be 32 this year. Goodness gracious. We've seen him have some pop. We've seen him have some speed. Not a great batting average. Going to play versus righties. ADP 466. What's your thoughts on Seth Brown?
I just think his time is up. I feel like he's going to open the season in a strong side platoon. And if he doesn't set the world on fire, he's either going to cede time to younger players or get traded to another team. I think he's got one more year of control after 2025. I don't know how many teams would be interested in him, but I don't think he's going to be much of an impact in fantasy, maybe in deep AL only leagues.
No, that's fair. Like, I've only looked at him like draft champions. We're going 50 rounds. Like, give me that guy super late. That's it. So, yeah, not much interest in him anymore. I think that time has passed. Like, we joke, but 32 is old on this team. Not old is Jacob Wilson, a guy that got brought up last year, gets hurt right away, really kind of hampers the hype train that came behind him. It limited minors because he's only 23. He spent 2 years throughout the minors, basically. Solid batting average skills, not a ton of power and speed, I guess. A lot of question marks on what he can bring to the table. But looks like he's going to get full run this year, at least to start the year, as the future shortstop of the A's. And he has an ADP of 358, Jake. So what are we thinking on Jacob Wilson?
He's really interesting. A very unique player. I feel like similar to Luis Arraez, maybe even with a little bit more pop. Just incredible contact ability, even in his brief major league sample, a 9.7% strikeout rate. But in the minors, we're talking 6.6% strikeout rate. And he paired that with 7 homers and a 200 WRC plus at AA and AAA. Unreal numbers. So his contact ability, I think, is almost... it's probably unmatched on the team, maybe in the whole organization. He's really something else. That's why he went 6th overall in 2023. So in fantasy, he's not much of a traditional fantasy player because he's not going to produce a lot of home runs. He's not super fast either. He's going to be only a batting average guy, but in points leagues, this guy's going to be really good. We're talking like points leagues that are valuing walks and devaluing strikeouts. Those are huge because he could be a 1-to-1 walk to strikeout guy. And those players, even with little slugging, they're still going to put up huge numbers in points leagues because they're just never striking out. They're never getting those negative points. So I think Wilson's going to be a batting average guy, and we may have to wait a couple of years for some power or speed to come into play, but the contact ability is for real. So that the average, I think you can almost guarantee at least 280.
That's a great point on the points league part, because he should be able to rack that up pretty well and just accumulate, especially at a low ADP. So I think that's a strong point, because roto leagues, it's tough to go there just yet, because it's kind of an average, and what else is the question? Yeah. But yeah, the points could be there, and maybe he turns into something someday, and or he's just a better real life player than fantasy.
Yeah,
that happens too. Any other bats to look at? Like, I didn't put Miguel Andujar or Gio Urshela on here because I figured we kind of know who Gio Urshela is by now. Miguel Andujar is going to platoon with Seth Brown. We saw moments of grandeur there, and then moments of Miguel Andujar there. Anybody else right now? We'll do prospects later, but anybody else we should be looking at on the opening day roster potentially?
I think the only guy for me is Esteury Ruiz, and everybody knows him. He's more just a stolen base asset. Didn't get a lot of opportunities last year, which was sort of weird the way that they played that out. And I don't think Seth Brown and Andujar are enough to prevent him from taking over that role. And I think we saw a little bit more power potential last year too. He was barreling the ball a lot more despite the increase in swing and miss. But I still think there's something left in Ruiz there. And if he gets the opportunity in left field or right field, it doesn't matter, one of the corner outfields, I think he could definitely be at least an impactor in fantasy because of how fast he is in this current landscape of how easy it is to steal a base.
Yeah, his ADP is 535, worth a gamble there in deep formats. And we saw like signs of an improved Estuary before he got hurt. Like you mentioned, especially in the power department, we saw a guy almost going like Willie Mays Hayes on us there. And it was pretty cool to see. So maybe he is better than Brown and Andujar once he would click. You are 100% correct on that one. All right, let's head to the mound. And a team that usually has like JP Sears and a bunch of potential, like maybe quad A players that can pitch in the bigs. You never know how that pans out with them. They went and spent on some pitching, because they had to spend apparently, but they did, and that's great. Not discerning that. Let's start with the first one. They're now ace in the rotation, depending on how you look at it, but because he's a veteran, he probably gets the nod. Is Luis Severino, has an ADP of 312, coming off a pretty strong season with the New York Mets after some injury-riddled seasons in the Bronx, now coming over to Oakland at age 31. How are we feeling about that?
Not great. He's pretty mid when it comes to fantasy. He's not the old Luis Severino from the Yankees. He's a different Luis Severino. And I think it all comes down to the shift to a sinker. He focuses more on that, which allows him to avoid loud contact, but it also reduces his strikeout potential. His four-seamer is just not the same that it used to be. He throws it, when he throws it too often, it gets absolutely destroyed. So that's sort of why he's been forced to go to the sinker. And then he just doesn't really have anything to induce whiffs. He's got a sweeper that's good against righties, but he doesn't really have a consistent pitch to get lefties out. His cutter's pretty good, but it's in and out. And then his changeup is just terrible. So you don't really want him to be forced to rely on that when the cutter's not working. So maybe on the A's, we see a shift and the four seamer comes back and he starts getting more whiffs and we see him attacking lefties with that cutter. But I'm not going to invest in a potential resurgence for Severino this year.
Yep, I have passed on him every draft I've been in. Just not of interest at all. One of their other new acquisitions in a trade where I lost my buddy Joe Boyle, which T's and P's, hopefully things work out in Tampa Bay. He's going to
be crazy with them.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm hoping my love for him finally becomes true. Yeah. Jeffrey Springs. Now, another guy that's been fun to root for in the past, had some arm issues. I'll tell you this much, Jake. When I looked at his page, if you would have told me he was 32, I would have called you a liar. Yeah. I don't associate him with being of that age. So that's like surprised me quite a bit, but this is a guy that used to have like again, a ton of upside potential hype behind. What should we expect? Or what do you expect with Oakland ADP 255?
I'm not sure what to expect. We saw a diminished Springs when he returned from the injury last year. His velocity on his fastball was down. And so was the shape was a lot worse and the pitch got absolutely destroyed. First percentile ICR on pitcher list, which is ideal contact rate, meaning he had the fastball that got hit the hardest. So that's not ideal. The changeup is still really good and the slider is really good versus lefties, but now he's leaving the Rays and going to the A's. Can you expect them to like recreate that magic? Can he survive the hitter's park in Sacramento? What's his workload look like after throwing 33 innings in the majors last year? I don't know. If his stuff returns, I feel like he's on the verge of aced him because he was so good 2022 and 2023 at a 2.26 ERA across 150 innings with a 28% strikeout rate. Just unreal stuff. So if we see the stuff return, I think we can totally buy into spring. So that's going to be one you keep an eye on in spring training. But if we see the reduced fastball velocity again and we don't really have the same confidence that the A's can get what the Rays got out of him, then he's probably going to be what Nick dubs a cherry bomb, a guy who from start to start is really good or really bad, and you just never really know what it's going to be.
And that is frustrating as all get up when you're trying to pitch or even stream these guys in your lineup. Springs is one that I'm like excited about but concerned, and you said something there I should have asked at the beginning. Cause I have my thoughts, but I want yours first before I let mine out of the bag. There's been like rumblings that it's, that Sacramento is a pitcher's park because of the backdrop and this, that, and the other. You said hitter's park. Do you believe it will be a hitter's park?
I had heard that it was a hitter's park. That's what I've heard everybody saying, but if you've heard the opposite, then I don't know what's going on.
No, I've heard a couple people say that. I've been to that. I was there on opening day when that place built because I grew up in Woodland. I was in high school when that stadium was built. It is a hitter's ballpark, especially when it's hot. That ball flies out of that ballpark. So I just wanted to.
It's always hot in Sacramento in the summer.
Yeah. I just wanted your opinion. I know they're scheduling around. They're trying to schedule around the heat, but I hate to break it to people. It's 100 pretty much every day during the summertime. I've heard people say this, that, and the other. They mentioned the backdrop. Well, they just built a new clubhouse where the backdrop was. So who knows what that's going to look like now. Hmm. But I heard a couple people mentioning that. And I'm like, let's see what Jake has to say. I'm just curious because I have my thoughts. And if I'm proven wrong, so be it. That's great. I mean, like the only thing I could see changing it is if they use one heck of a humidor. That's the only thing because I don't care what backdrop you put in this thing. If you're not like the ace on the mound, if you're just an average pitcher, you ain't stopping anything in this bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to see like what your thoughts were because I've been kind of picking everybody's brain because the backdrop thing was news to me. So, all right, back to the story at hand here. JP Sears, who was the ace of the staff last year, very serviceable. I rostered him in a lot of places last year. Had more wins than most people would ever think of when it comes to JP Sears because he had 11, but with the ace, that's big. More importantly, back-to-back years of 172 or more innings with okay ratios, all things said and done. And his ADP is 487, Jake. Are we still in on JP Sears?
I mean, this is another guy that is pretty mid for me. Last year, I had some hope that with the foundation of a really good fastball, he would be able to take off. And he was decent. So I think in deeper leagues, 15-team leagues, he was probably really valuable just being able to go out there and not destroy your ratios and get you a pretty decent amount of wins. But the strikeouts are just not there. He doesn't have anything to support the fastball. So without any secondaries that are going to get him the whiffs, he needs to be more than a Toby, a guy with a 20 or under percent strikeout rate and decent ratios, then I'm probably not targeting him. And that usually has to do with, for me, when I'm late in drafts, I go for high upside where I want to just hit on a gemstone or whatever in the rough. And then usually I probably end up regretting not going for a guy that's just solid and is going to be there for you all year. So maybe that's just a draft strategy thing where you just get to the point of learning your lesson of wasting draft picks late in drafts that don't seem to be so consequential, that could really be your chance to secure somebody who's in your rotation all year rather than somebody who, you know, maybe a flash in the bottle. But yeah, I don't know. For me, that really just comes down to your draft strategy. If you have a lot of solid starters, I would probably want to go for more high upside. But if you're looking for stability late in the draft where you don't feel super comfortable about your high upside rotation, then Sears is definitely a stabilizing guy.
And let me clarify, I didn't draft JP Sears. I started picking him up to stream in like 2 start weeks, and he's like serviceable. So I just kind of hung on to him and utilized him off and on throughout the rest of the season. So yes, I'm with you. I wouldn't be going to draft.
I drafted JP him last year.
Oh, you did? My bad. I misunderstood. So yeah. Yeah. So you learned your lesson. There you go. But he's a definite streaming guy, but tough to roster like every week in and week out with JP Sears. All right. I kind of grouped this last one here. You have Joey Estes, you have Mitch Spence, they're projected in the rotation. But then we still have JT Jen. We have Brady Basso, I'm a kind of Brady Basso fan a little bit. Kind of like what I've seen there. How do you kind of see this shaking out? Are any of them worth rostering out the gate, or is it more of a wait and see stream approach?
It's definitely a wait and see. I don't think you're going to be fighting over anybody for Joey Estes and Mitch Spence and a lot of the other guys. What was interesting to me, though, was to see that Osvaldo Beto has the highest ADP amongst those ancillary starters. I guess that's probably because his numbers last year were really good in a small sample. 3.41 ERA, 1.09 whip, 24% strikeout rate. But that's just pretty lucky on the hard contact situation where he had a 98th percentile ICR. So I think he was pretty lucky in reducing weak contact. So you can see the huge disparity, the 2-run disparity between his XFIP and his XERA, where his XERA is under 3 and his XFIP's nearing 5. And that just suggests, okay, look at the quality of contact. That was why he has such a good XERA. And can we expect that to happen again next year? I don't think so. I'm not I don't look at Osvaldo Beto and be like, oh my gosh, this is the next guy that's going to make it in the rotation. And so when it comes to all the guys that are sort of in that huge group of ace, young ace starters that are trying to make a name for themselves, none of them set themselves apart from any of the other ones. So there's nobody where I'm like, okay, this is my dude. I thought it was going to be Mitch Spence. I was tweeting about him last year when he was joining the rotation, and then he was a lot worse in the rotation. So there's nobody really here that draws me in the preseason, but I'll definitely be keeping an eye out during the regular season. But you're not going to need to waste a draft pick on any of these guys.
Yep, agree. Definite streaming guys. Like I said, I liked Basso at times. I even wrote about him at HQ, I think, on one of my AL playing time tomorrow deals, and it kind of came to fruition a little bit there. So that was fun. The Osvaldo Beto thing is surprising to me because I figured he – maybe it's – again, you can't trust roster resource 100% right now. They're just speculating. But he's kind of the elder statesman in that group we just mentioned. So it feels like being the A's, like, let's pitch him, see if we can trade him type thing before these guys come up. That's kind of how I see it actually playing out. Maybe that's why he's getting drafted higher, is other people are thinking, hey, he's going to start the year with the team. We'll see what happens. Given to what your point is he worth it regardless? That's the million-dollar question. So we'll see. But, just a point I like to make once in a while to remind people that roster resource is not the end-all be-all. That's why we do this show and talk about what other options are there just in case, because a lot will change by opening day. All right, let's talk bullpen here. Mason Miller, amazing. And like you mentioned, we got three guys in the top 75 when it comes to the Oakland A's. Times have changed. ADP of 43 with Mason Miller. Are you paying that premium, though? Because that's been actually a topic of conversation in some recent shows I've done, is we love the stuff Mason Miller has. There's the injury concerns and whatnot. Do you want to pay that price?
Probably not. And that's definitely a direct result of, well, and I don't even think it's that. I think for me, I'm just not going to draft closers that early. And maybe that's coming from a point of privilege doing in the pen. I have, you know, a lot more research on relievers than the general fantasy baseball player. So for me, I'm always like, I'm not going to go for a closer early because I know what I can get later. I just have that confidence in myself. And then with Miller, I think there's going to be a lot of I think people's perspectives are going to be swayed towards the first half, where he was absolutely unreal and it was so fun to watch. He was, I don't know, maybe the most electric player in baseball when he was during the first couple months of the season. But his second half was not quite as good. He had a 2.77 ERA and a 35% strikeout rate, which are still really good, but I think those are more indicative of the pitcher we're going to see next year, as opposed to like the sub 2 ERA and 45% strikeout rate, unreal best reliever in baseball type beat that he was on last year. So I still think he's going to be really good, but it's not going to be in competition to be the number one reliever in baseball. He's going to be in that 5-8 range where he's very, very solid, just doesn't get the opportunities pitching for the A's to get a lot of saves. And then also I think he can, you know, face some troubles from hitters because the league has adjusted so well to velocity.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page with you. Like, I love him. I had a lot of shares of him last year. I was targeting him in drafts last year, a lot of different ADP, obviously, than this year. I think he's very good, but a big part of it's like, if I am taking a closer early, I'll wait a little bit and get like a Raisel Iglesias or one of these other guys that I as a track record and team context, yeah, things along those lines, or just wait, as you mentioned. So I'm with you. Like, I like him. I think he's very, very good, but there's a lot of question marks at that price tag. When looking at the bullpen, like they just signed Jose Leclerc, that kind of made me chuckle. They have other options. I've heard Michael Otañez, I believe, is a big name. Who would be your guy next in line or your dark horse if something were to happen to Mason Miller?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you got him right on. Leclerc would be my next in line, and Otañez would be my dark horse. Leclerc has the most experience as a closer, and he's the most veteran arm in that bullpen. And he was actually pretty underrated last year. If you look at the underlying ERA estimators compared to his ERA, he was actually pretty decent last year with a 31% strikeout rate as well. And then Otañez throws 98 miles per hour and gets tons of swings and misses. So I think he's super legit, and that bullpen is very underrated with guys like Tyler Ferguson and Grant Holman as well. They actually have some decent arms that are going to be throwing some gas and actually, I think, getting a decent amount of outs behind the starters and ahead of Mason Miller. But so I think if Miller goes down, Leclerc's going to be the first guy to step up. But if Miller struggles and Leclerc struggles, I think Otañez probably has the best stuff to be able to be that dark horse guy to take over.
Beautiful. Got me some Otañez shares already, so I like that quite a bit. All right, the fun part when it comes to Oakland, like you mentioned, the Lawrence Butler conversations we've had, there's guys every year. It's a very young team, and eventually that'll deplete the system. But when they are the A's, their system's bigger than most, not talented as much, but they do have a couple guys that are close. Who do you see maybe making an impact here in 2025?
Well, obviously Jacob Wilson, he's still is a prospect number one in the A system, 24 in baseball. I saw Nick Kurtz was one of the highest drafted, one of their prospects. I don't think he's going to make it up this year, but
I don't either.
He's really good. He was a first round pick last year, fourth overall, and absolutely tore up A ball and double A. So there is a slight chance, especially if something happens to Soderstrom. So don't let Nick Kurtz's call up surprise you, but I don't think you have to go drafting him. Someone like Mason Barnett, who was acquired from the Royals in the Lucas Ursek deal, he's their number six prospect, but he's more like a 4-5 starter. I think he fits into that big glob of all those other young dudes. Probably won't separate himself, but definitely is going to get some major league time this year. Colby Thomas, he's getting drafted a lot, which is interesting, and that's because across Double A and Triple A, he hit 31 homers and stole 15 bags while batting .277. He's sort of a jack of all trades guy with a 55 grade in power, run, arm, and field, according to MLB Pipeline. So there is a chance he comes up and he doesn't really have the tools to really set himself apart, but those numbers in the minor leagues are hard to argue with, especially for a guy you can get after pick 600 if you really want to take a chance on him. And then I think the last two guys would be Max Muncy, who could maybe get a chance. He got up to AAA last year, but he's still only 21. He was the A's first round pick in 2021. He is probably not going to be a huge difference maker in fantasy, but just his prospect pedigree is somebody that makes him somewhat interesting. And then last guy is Denzel Clark, who showed a lot of speed last year at AA. And that's sort of about it. It's like if he can make it to the majors, his defense and his speed is going to keep him there. And maybe he does enough at the plate to be somebody that can be somewhat intriguing in fantasy because of how much speed he provides.
Yeah, they have this interesting crop. Like, everyone wants Kurtz, but I'm glad you said it. It feels like he's another year away, barring just I don't know, some craziness taking place, either desperation or something. Colby Thomas is a name I've heard a lot just because of what we saw jumping two levels. But like you said, most of these guys are maybe more of a year away or need some more polishing before they have the impact. Just, you don't have these guys just jumping on the scenes. Just, yep, hey, you never know. And that's what's fun. And the A's are a team that you will see a lot of changes throughout the season. That's what they do year in and year out. Speaking of which, last question I have for you, as for every guest on these shows, what are your expectations for the Oakland Athletics in 2025?
I'm not sure. Hopefully, be fun and exciting, give people a reason to watch, give the A's fans a reason to, hold on to their team just a little bit longer, because I know there's going to be plenty of people that are in the same boat that I am, where they're not going to support the team. But if the team starts getting exciting and you got Mason Miller throwing 100 miles per hour and JJ Bleda doing what he does, and everybody, if everything comes together, it's going to be difficult for guys like us who have sort of disowned the team to stay away from them if they're getting all exciting. So I don't want to get my hopes too high, but I think that's sort of like what I would expect from them. Hopefully just some excitement to maybe get some fans before they go to Las Vegas.
That's one way to phrase it, for sure. It's a fun ballpark. I'm curious what additions they're making, because they said they have to make it more friendly to major league teams, which I'm like, you could probably have left it just the way it was for this team, but that was my two cents.
Yeah, still an upgrade over the Coliseum.
Exactly. Well, it's cool. They have the grass hills you can sit on, and then all this stuff. It's a cool little vibe. It's like the A's vibe to me. A's are always just kind of this kind of team that wants to have fun, ragtag bunch, and that's just their deal. It's a cool vibe for them. Type play. So I hope it goes well for the players' sake. Let's put it that way. I could care less about the people in the luxury boxes, but the players' sake, hope it goes well and things continue to move in a positive way, as positively as they can, I guess. All right. That'll wrap it up there. Jake, thanks for joining me as always. It is a pleasure chatting with you, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me as always.
All right, everybody. Make sure you check them out over there at pitcherlist.com. Baseball HQ, his podcast In the Pen Pod at Pitcher List, and First Pitch Podcast, of course, and much, much more down the line for the one, the only, Jake Crumpler. All right, everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 721, your 2025 A's preview. Catch you all next time.